Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and views of our guest. This evening our guest is Dr. Donald Meller, who's a professor of cardiac surgery at the University of Washington. But we're not going to be talking about cardiac surgery this evening. We're going to be talking about something called iodine. And Dr. Miller has written a fascinating article, which was recently published in the Journal of the American Associations of Physicians and Surgeons, and we've been very interested in this subject recently, and so we asked him to join us this evening. Dr. Miller, thank you so very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Well, how did you get interested in iodine? That's a long way from cardiac surgery.
Well, it sure is, but you know, I've used iodine on a daily basis for the last 35 years in heart surgery. We use it to prepare the patient's skin, and it remains the best antiseptic for preventing wound infections after surgery. It kills 90% of bacteria on skin within 90 seconds. But like most other physicians and surgeons, I viewed iodine from a narrow perspective. Most doctors... Do you hear me?
Yes, I do. In fact, I was just sort of chuckling because I can remember, of course, using that iodine preparation for so many years preparing the skin, even sometimes using it in wounds to wash them out. But go right ahead.
Right. Well, most doctors view iodine as an antiseptic and know that the thyroid gland needs it to make thyroid hormones, and that's it. But I have a colleague and a friend who practices holistic medicine up in my area here, and he suggested that I read a book by Dr. David Derry entitled Breast Cancer and Iodine. The book is a bit disorganized, has references at the end of each chapter not cited in the text, and no index, but it was an eye-opener nonetheless. I lost a sister who died in her early 30s from breast cancer, and this book spurred me to study iodine. With the resources available at the University of Washington, I did a literature review and then wrote a paper on its extrathyroidal benefits that you mentioned in your initial remarks.
The idea that somehow iodine could be related to breast cancer. Now, you know, when I first heard this sort of thing, I'll have to admit, I just put it off. I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. But the more I hear about it, the more I begin to look at the literature, the more evidence there is that the breast does need iodine, and that you can get all sorts of women get all sorts of problems because they're iodine deficient, and the same thing with the ovaries and testes. And we need iodine for almost every tissue in our body.
Well, one of the interesting findings in research is the thyroid gland concentrates iodine up to 40-fold higher concentration than what's in blood and stores it. But it turns out that the iodine pump, which is called the sodium iodine symporter, is also present in breast tissue and other tissues of the body. And it turns out that the iodine is indeed very important for breast health.
And are there a definite relationship between iodine deficiency and breast cancer?
Yes, there is.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be talking a lot more about this evening with Dr. Donald Miller. And he's taken the time to really investigate something, not necessarily in his field, but vitally important to the American people. And fortunately, there's a small group of physicians who are beginning to analyze this data, and it's all there, much of this in the scientific literature, and, well, maybe you can help educate your doctor. Well, Dr. Miller, you go ahead and pick up the story from there.
Well, when I started researching iodine, the first thing I investigated was the difference in iodine consumption between the Japanese and Americans. and the differences in their state of health. It turns out that the Japanese consume 100 times more iodine than Americans do. And the reason is they eat a lot of seaweed. And it turns out that seaweed is a potent source of iodine. And more than 95% of the iodine they consume comes from seaweed, which includes kelp, brown algae, nori sheets, which is red algae with sushi, and chlorella, which is green algae. And Japan's Bureau of Public Health did a study in 1964 and found that the Japanese then were eating 4.5 grams of seaweed a day, with a measured iodine content in that amount of 13.8 milligrams. And the recommended dietary allowance for Americans is 150 micrograms, or 0.15 milligrams. And it turns out that the Japanese are eating even more now, because a study in 2001 showed that their seaweed consumption had increased to 14.6 grams a day, which would be equivalent to 43.8 milligrams of iodine a day. And by the way, eating fish doesn't help much, because to get 13.8 milligrams of iodine, you'd have to eat 10 to 15 pounds of fish every day. Actually, more than up to 20 pounds a day. So here you have this huge difference in iodine intake. Americans in microgram amounts, Japanese in milligram amounts. And then you find that the Japanese have the longest lifespan of any industrialized country, 81 plus years. And Americans have a lifespan that's number 43 among the 200 leading countries at 76 years. Furthermore, breast cancer in Japanese women is the lowest in the world, until recently when some have adopted a Western diet. And in the U.S., breast cancer has the highest incidence in the world. Furthermore, the infant mortality rate in Japan is the lowest in the world, one half that of the infant mortality rate in the U.S. So these are striking figures. You can't say that it's iodine that's made this difference, but one thing you can say for people that say you shouldn't take more than 1 milligram a day is it can't be very bad for you.
Well, that's all, please. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Miller was simply pointing out that the people in Japan eat about 100 times more, or consume about 100 times more iodine than the people in the United States, and they somewhere between 12.5, 14.5 milligrams per day. We of course, get a hundredth of that. Certainly the Japanese have a longer lifespan, they have much less breast carcinoma, they seem to be overall healthier, and it doesn't necessarily mean that one follows the other. In other words, that the longer lifespan and the decrease in breast carcinoma related to the iodine, but certainly, obviously, they can safely eat that amount of iodine without any problem, unless, of course, on that rare occasion they're allergic to it. So you pick up the story there. Anyway, Dr. Miller was just saying he got fascinated after reading a book called The Miracle of Iodine and began looking into this further. So please pick up the story.
Well, it turns out iodine has a very interesting history. It was discovered in 1811 by a chemist that was using the saltpeter, using it to make saltpeter for the weapons that Napoleon was using. And by the 1840s, it was looked upon as a universal panacea and given in gram amounts to treat a whole variety of diseases. And Dr. Albert St. George, who discovered vitamin C and won the Nobel Prize for that, was a strong proponent of iodine. And I actually had the opportunity in 1962 to spend a summer doing research at the Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, where he was at, and got to hear some of his lectures. And I was fascinated to learn, when I started researching the iodine subject, that he himself would take potassium iodide in 1 gram a day. And in his book, Biogenics, he wrote, quote, "When I was a medical student, iodine in the form of KI, potassium iodide, was the universal medicine. Nobody knew what it did, but it did something, and did something good. We students used to sum up the situation with this little rhyme. If you don't know where, what, and why, prescribe ye then K and I." And I might add that Dr. St. Georgie enjoyed excellent health and lived to the age of 93. And then, in the Encyclopedia Britannica, in the venerated 11th edition, published in 1911, it states, quote, "Their pharmacological action is as obscure as their effects in certain disease conditions are consistently brilliant. Our ignorance of their mode of action," this is iodide, "is cloaked by the term deobstruent, which implies that they possess the power of driving out impurities from the blood and tissue. Most notably is this the case with the poisonous products of syphilis. In its tertiary stage, and also earlier, this disease yields in the most rapid and unmistakable fashion to iodine, so much so that the administration of these salts is at present the best means of determining whether, for instance, a cranial tumor be syphilitic or not." So iodide was used to treat syphilis, arteriosclerosis, and chronic lung disease, and it continues to be used in gram amounts in the 21st century today by dermatologists. They treat various awful skin conditions due to fungus and autoimmune inflammatory conditions with great success. So we have a situation with iodine where it's needed in microgram amounts for the thyroid and milligram amounts for breast tissue and other tissues in the body, and can be used therapeutically and has been in the past with success in gram amounts. But we have a situation now with the mainstream medicine and government officials who tell us that we should not, the recommended dose is should be 150 micrograms, and anything over a milligram is excessive and dangerous.
But are there any scientific studies that show that it's dangerous?
No. The Institute of Medicine and the World Health Organization and all came up with a 1 milligram or 2 milligrams as sort of a consensus view based on no evidence.
Well, and of course, if you want to be scientific, you got to have evidence to base your assumptions on, and you would think that there'd be something that they, some sort of a study or controls, rather than simply picking a figure out of the air.
Right. Well, there were a couple of things that led them to it. Thyroidologists, if you talk to a thyroidologist, and you tell them you're taking iodine in milligram amounts, they'll not be pleased. And they will cite two reasons why you shouldn't do that. One is a phenomenon called the Wolff-Chaikow effect, where there's a temporary suppression of thyroid hormone synthesis when you take large doses of iodine. But the fact of the matter is, this effect, if it does indeed, is of no clinical significance. And then the other thing that can happen is that the TSH, the thyroid stimulating hormone levels, can go up, which are an indicator of hypothyroidism. But in the few people where they do go up, they don't have any symptoms, any clinical symptoms of hypothyroidism. So there really is no a reason to say it's excessive. But iodine has become the purview of thyroidologists. And so, from their point of view, even though other tissues in the body concentrate it, they just think only the thyroid needs it, and therefore it should be taken in doses that make the thyroid happy, which is 150 micrograms a day.
Well, now, where do we originate to get our iodine from? I had always thought that all of the salt was iodized. I was shocked to learn that a lot of the salt that's sold in the stores doesn't have any iodine in it any longer.
45% of the salt sold in grocery stores has no iodine.
Why did they take it out? Because at one time, wasn't it in almost all of the salt?
Yes, it was, but it was not a mandated law, and there's a sort of an iodophobia, almost a phobia against iodine that's been generated and promoted by endocrinologists, and so people are afraid of it and choose the salt that doesn't have it. And then to make matters worse, those that do take use iodide-treated salt have decreased their use of it by 65% because of the low-salt approach to diet. And the other thing with iodine is that it used to be put in milk and used as a dough conditioner for making bread. And when that was done, up until 1980, the amount of iodine Americans consumed was twice what it is today. And back in 1980, when the iodine consumption was twice what it is today, the incidence of breast cancer was 1 in 20 women that get breast cancer during their life. Now, with the iodine dropped in half, the incidence of breast cancer is 1 in 7 women will get breast cancer, which is the same number of women, 1 in 7, who have low urine iodine levels of less than 50 micrograms that indicate severe iodine deficiency.
Well, what's the relationship between fibrocystic disease of the breast and cancer of the breast? Is there any relationship, and is there any proven relationship between fibrocystic disease of the breast and iodine deficiency?
Yes, there's a relationship with both. Fibrocystic disease predisposes to cancer, and lack of iodine predisposes to fibrocystic disease. In 1920, an autopsy study done in women showed that 3% of breasts had fibrocystic changes. Now, 90% of women have fibrocystic disease of the breast, and 6 million women in the U.S. have severe pain that lasts more than 6 days during their menstrual cycle.
Well, you know, that's a dramatic increase. I mean, going from where it was, early in the 20th century to where it is today. I mean, obviously, something is causing that dramatic increase. Has anybody tried to figure out what it is? I mean, you and I would both think it was probably the lack of iodine in the intake, but you would think that somebody, some of these smart physicians or researchers would have said, hey, something dramatic has changed, a dramatic increase in fibrocystic disease, which predisposes to breast cancer. Maybe we ought to find out what it is.
Well, you would think so, and it's very discouraging because there are two studies that have been done, one in Russia in the 70s, which showed that iodine cured fibrocystic breast disease in 70% of patients. Another study done in 1993 in Seattle and in Canada, a composite of two groups, showed a similar 70% cure rate. The study done in Seattle was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial, and a company purchased the data and statistically analyzed it and found a highly statistically significant improvement in fibrocystic disease in the women that were given 5 milligrams of iodine a day compared with those who were given a placebo. And in this case, the placebo was just an aqueous mixture of brown vegetable dye with quinine. The p-value was 0.001. The investigators submitted this study to the FDA seeking approval to do a large-scale clinical trial, and it was turned down. And I talked with one of the authors of this study who's in Seattle, and he said that the FDA told him that they couldn't approve it because iodine is not a drug. But that has changed now, and there's a company, Symbolon, that is doing a randomized trial.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Donald Miller. Well, that's amazing, you know, because the FDA seems to be intent upon regulating just about everything in the world, and yet, of course, they wouldn't authorize a very legitimate test saying, well, iodine wasn't a drug. So, I mean, it's almost as if they well, somebody there objected to doing that study. I mean, they could say, well, we don't object to your doing a study. I mean, that's the major thing that the people would have going for them. They could say, we don't object to it, and that would authorize it. They could say, well, but by not authorizing it, they certainly discourage it.
Yes, that's what happened. Well, they've seen the light, and they have authorized one that's underway now. So one hopes that this evidence will be forthcoming to support the observations of these two studies. And then with regard to breast cancer, there are a number of animal studies that show iodine substantially decreases the risk, the incidence of breast cancer in rats that are given carcinogens. Another piece of evidence that adds biological plausibility to the hypothesis that iodine prevents breast cancer includes the finding that the cells in the breast that become cancerous, the ductal cells, contain an iodine pump and concentrate iodine. And also people with iodine-deficient goiters have a 3-time greater incidence of breast cancer. And when you take all of this evidence, it's reasonable to hypothesize, I believe, having reviewed it, that fibrocystic disease of the breast and breast cancer are iodine deficiency disorders, just like goiter and cretinism are recognized iodine deficiency disorders. But the sad thing is, as of 2003, after most of these studies were published, a leading textbook on breast diseases, Bland and Copeland's The Breast, Comprehensive Management of Benign and Malignant Disorders, fails to mention iodine anywhere in its 1,766 pages.
Well, that certainly could be a sort of an oversight, couldn't it?
No. I was at an iodine conference in Scottsdale presenting a paper with Dr. Bernard Eskin, one of the main researchers who did the Gantt paper in 1993 and has done a lot of important work on iodine. And I mentioned this to him, and he said he knows the editors of that textbook, and they told him, as he put it, you can't touch iodine.
Why would you say you can't touch iodine? You're a scientist. I mean, why would they be afraid to mention this in a textbook? You have to you ask yourself, well, mainly, you know, why would they? Is somebody putting pressure on them? Did he have any idea why that had occurred?
Well, iodine is a very cheap substance that can't be patented, and
Well, all right. I can. Anyway, I would just ask the question. You know, just to sort of see what sort of response. Perhaps our audience could begin to wonder why doctors would be told that they can't discuss something. I mean, as scientists, we should be able to discuss everything. And I will tell you, I have personally had people, physicians and dentists, come to me and tell me that they can't discuss things. They'd love to come on my program. They agree with what we're saying, but they've been threatened. And as one doctor who's a professor in a major university in Canada said, I'm not going to risk my family and my reputation. I've been threatened. I can't come on. I can't speak about it publicly. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest this evening is Dr. Donald Miller. We're talking about the relationship between iodine and breast carcinoma, and certainly there is a great deal of evidence, not only in human beings, but certainly in animal studies, where they've actually taken animals and they've given them carcinogens to precipitate breast carcinoma, and then those animals who had the iodine have a significant difference between the animals who did not have the iodine as far as breast carcinoma?
Yes, the Garcia and Solis and co-workers, for example, analyzed the effect of iodine on preventing breast cancer in rats given the carcinogen nitromethylurea. And molecular iodine, I2, was more effective than potassium iodine, it turns out, and reduced cancer incidence to 30% compared with controls where the cancer incidence with this carcinogen was 73%, with a significant p-value. And another study used DMBA as a carcinogen, showed the same thing with even higher p-value,
a significance of 0.01.
So there's really a great deal of at least animal evidence, and then, of course, the other studies that we've been talking about. Well, what about some of the other tissues? What about the ovary? What about the testes? Is there any evidence there that there's a relationship between iodine deficiency and certainly ovarian disease, polycystic disease, or cancer? Because cancer of the ovary is really, it seems to be a disease that is increasing significantly in recent years. Is that true?
Yes, it is true, but there are very few studies, if any, that have been done with regard to iodine preventing ovarian cancer that I've been able to find.
What about just a general ovarian health or normal ovarian function?
I don't know of any.
All right, fine. Any other tissues in the body that seem to do better with large doses of iodine?
Yes, in milligram amounts. Iodine is an antiseptic that we paint on patients' skin to prevent surgical wound infections. Well, using iodine as an antiseptic, the body does the same thing with the salivary glands, the stomach, and the cervix. And these tissues absorb high concentrations of iodine and then secrete iodide into the mouth, the lining of the stomach, and the vagina, which helps prevent infection.
Really?
Yes.
I wonder, I would be very interested to know what it would do as far as the saliva is concerned, because, of course, a dental caries is primarily a bacterial disease, and iodine and fluoride in the same category. There's a great deal of evidence of reason that fluoride toothpaste works, because the high concentration of certainly of fluoride does kills the bacteria. Is there any suggestion or evidence that the high concentration of iodine in the saliva would do the same?
There have not been much in the way of studies done about it, but it would make sense because it is a strong antiseptic that kills bacteria. The skin, arteries, and the bone also like iodine, and as does the thymus gland, which has an iodine pump. And thymus gland is the seat of the T-cell adaptive immune system. So in terms of the benefits of iodine, one of them is to strengthen the immune system.
Well, that's really fascinating, because the thymus is something we don't usually think about. It's very large in children, but I guess it persists into adult life. And so the T-cells are instrumental as far as the immune response. Have there been any studies there that show that people who use iodine seem to have any better immune response?
Not much, no. But the more and more research is being done with iodine, and particularly with its sodium iodide symporter, which has been genetic structure of that gene has been that makes this importer has now been cloned, and studies that are being used to see the effect. For example, one study with lung cancer cells, human lung cancer cells that are grown in test tubes, if you graft on the iodine pump into those cancer cells, it'll take up iodine, those cells die off completely.
Really? And so with patients then that have cancer, is there any suggestion at all that iodine might slow down the growth of the cancer?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there's consideration since the iodine pump gene has been cloned to use that to inject that in tumors so that it'll take up iodine, and particularly radioactive iodine-131, which will destroy the tumor.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a few minutes with Dr. Donald Miller right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Dr. Donald Miller. We're talking really about the about iodine and its uses as far as maintaining the health. Now, you mentioned bone. Of course, as an orthopedic surgeon, my ears went right up there. I'd never even heard about iodine as far as bone metabolism or bone health is concerned. How would it affect bone in any way? Would it have any effect upon the osteoporosis or osteomalacia that plagues so many older people like myself?
Well, the uptake by bone is seen in doing total body CineScans, where you inject iodine 125 and take pictures of the body and see where the intravenously injected iodine settles out. And bone is one of the tissues where it does get taken up and concentrated. But I am not aware of any studies in terms of how iodine directly affects the health of bone.
And really, that's interesting because, of course, we know that fluoride has a propensity for bone, and of course, in areas where there's fluorosis, you get definite changes. And, of course, iodine and fluoride are very, very closely related to the same part of the periodic table. What about a thyroid disease itself? I mean, do adequate doses of iodine, like, say, 12.5 milligrams a day, influence thyroid function? And how about autoimmune disease of the thyroid, like Hashimoto's disease and the other autoimmune diseases that plague so many people today? Because, you know, it seems to be so much more common today than when I went to medical school. I'm speaking now of the both hypothyroidism and these autoimmune diseases of the thyroid.
Well, it is true it's more common, and the two main causes of hypothyroidism are iodine deficiency and autoimmune Hashimoto's that attacks the thyroid tissue. One thing that a lot of endocrinologists don't do with hypothyroidism is measure the iodine content in the body, which is done by a urine measurement of the iodine concentration, or even better, to do a iodine loading test and measure the amount of iodine excreted over a 24-hour period. There's a group of doctors who have mounted what's called the Iodine Project.
Hold that thought, I'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Dr. Donald Miller, and we're talking about the Iodine Project. We're talking about testing of iodine levels. We do have Mike waiting in Coeur d'Alene, and I'll ask Mike to hold for a moment or two. But before I go on, I just wanted to have Dr. Miller have an opportunity to get out his website and any other information he would like to make available this evening. Do you have a website? Is there any place you think people should go to get more information on the subject of iodine?
Yes. My website is my name, Donald Miller, with no spaces. It's www.donaldmiller.com. And on my website, I have two articles on iodine that I've written. One for, as you mentioned, the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons, and I have that accessible on the site. And I also wrote one entitled Iodine for Health that was published on lewrockwell.com a few months ago, which is on the site. I also have PowerPoint slides of lectures I've given on iodine, one with narration, which people interested in this subject might find interesting. And I also have a link, since it's the seaweed that Japanese consume to get most of their iodine, I have a link to a good palatable liquid source of brown seaweed that you can use, which our family does as well.
All right, fine. You created with a product called Iodorol, and
yes.
Is that a satisfactory product?
Yes, and I mentioned the Iodine Project. And this is a very important project that three doctors are involved in. One, Dr. Guy Abraham, in Southern California. Dr. Fleckis that I think you interviewed recently.
Yes, Dr. George Fletcher, right?
Yeah, and then Dr. Brownstein in Michigan, I believe. And these three physicians have now treated 4,000 people with iodorol in doses ranging from 12.5 milligrams a day, which is the amount in one tablet, up to 100 milligrams a day in some diabetics. And they have found that using these doses, 12 to 100 milligrams a day, the amount of problems occurring with the thyroid gland are very low. The incidence of hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism, is not much different than the general population that don't take these doses. And these doctors, having spoken with them, will treat Hashimoto's disease with iodorol, but only after a good nutritional program is started that includes selenium and other vitamins and micronutrients.
Now, I noticed in your article in the American Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons that you mentioned that people should also be taking magnesium and selenium along with the iodine. What was the rationale for that?
The peroxidase enzymes that are important in iodine iodination of proteins to form the thyroid hormones, T4 and T3, use selenium. And other enzymes that mediate iodine function use magnesium. So in order for the iodine to exhibit its maximum effect, you need to have those two minerals in particular.
And, of course, a good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock, who is a neurosurgeon, has commented that so many people are magnesium deficient, and certainly in cardiac surgery, apparently, the cardiac surgeons are worried about magnesium when they're in the operating room, but they don't seem to be too worried about it outside the operating room. And so many people are magnesium deficient.
Well, we certainly give our heart surgery patients magnesium pre, post-op, and intra-op, and it is very important. I'm encouraged that my conventional medicine colleagues are slowly getting more attuned to complementary and alternative approaches and to nutritional approaches to prevention as well. I think we're going to see this gain steam.
Well, I certainly hope so. When I was practicing medicine, orthopedics, I certainly stressed nutrition to my patients, traditional orthopedic surgery, and did all the routine procedures that orthopedics does. But I stressed the importance of nutrition along with that, and I honestly think that the patients did far better when they were taking vitamins and minerals and supplements and all of the other things we talk about.
Well, I completely agree, and I know Dr. Blaylock, and we communicate with each other, and I highly recommend his books and writings on this subject. He does very thorough research, reviews all the literature, and I'm very impressed with what he has to say.
Well, Russell's been a friend for many, many years, and we're certainly pleased and honored to have him as a friend. We have him as a frequent guest here on Radio Liberty. And I think that people, really need to start looking into selenium. In fact, the first time I ever heard about selenium, we had a doctor Dr. Wallach, who has some crazy ideas. But he has radio programs all across America. But I will tell you, he was the first one to introduce me to this idea that selenium was vitally important, and I will be eternally grateful to him for actually pointing me to certain of the things that I never saw stressed in regular medical literature. And selenium and magnesium are both vitally important for individuals and for individual health.
Yes, and one thing that should be emphasized, we're talking about one particular kind of iodine, and that's inorganic iodine. And there are
four commercially available types of inorganic non-radioactive iodine. One is the Lugol solution, which is 5% iodine, I2, and 10% iodide. And that's been around for a long time. And two drops of Lugol solution is equivalent to one iodorol tablet, which has the same relative concentration of iodine and iodide. I take the Lugol solution. My wife doesn't like the taste.
does she take the iodorol or what?
And I actually looked up the cost of this very important substance for our health, and 12.5 milligrams of Lugol solution a day costs 4 cents, and Adderall tablets is 25 cents.
Okay. So, well, you better humor your wife and let her take the tablet. Anyway, of course, I think probably Lugol solution can be gotten from any pharmacy. I'll have to admit I take the Adderall because I don't like a bad taste, but that's...
Well, both for listeners that want to consider this, the easiest way is just to Google Lugol or Iodorol, and on the first page you'll find places that can sell this and ship it without a prescription.
Okay, fine. Of course, it is not considered a drug, so you don't need a prescription. And we'll talk to our listeners a little later this evening about if they're interested in knowing more about that aspect of it. Under any circumstances, you know, certainly, you think that women should be routinely taking an iodine supplement as far as the health of their breast is concerned?
My study of this subject would indicate that the answer is yes.
And, you know, one of the things that really disturbs me, especially because my doctor told me I should be taking thyroid because my thyroid was down, and of course I didn't do it, but so many people today are taking iodine supplements.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite...
So many people that are taking, I should say, are taking thyroid supplements.
Thyroid supplements,
I can't believe how many people are on thyroid.
I think the most widely prescribed drug is levothyroxine.
Right. Do you think if people were taking large doses of iodine, they wouldn't need to take that, or is there any way to tell? Has anybody really done a study to find out if you increase your iodine consumption if you could not have to take the thyroid?
Well, the doctors in the Iodine Project now have 4,000 patients they're following, and what they find is that on milligram doses of iodine, many people can drop their thyroid hormone level in half or more and get off it.
Okay, fine. Well, do you mind taking some calls? We could. We have a girl.
Sure.
Dee is calling us from Spokane, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Dee. How are you doing?
Hi. Doing all right. Hello, Dr. Stan, Dr. Miller. I've been on thyroid hormone for a couple decades, and I found that it's losing its effectiveness. We've changed the dose from 30 to 60 to 90 milligrams. It's an Armour thyroid extract. And what would be my chance of success at using supplementation? I already eat a lot of fish, and I eat iodized salt, but it doesn't seem to be effective. Are there other things that can poison thyroid metabolism?
Well, the fish and the iodized salt is basically providing iodide in microgram amounts. To get it in milligram amounts, you've either got to eat seaweed or take an iodorol tablet or Lugol solution. A good thing to do is to get the iodine loading test to see how iodine deficient you might be. And with the iodine loading test, the doctors in the project have found that the vast majority of people, more than 95%, are indeed iodine deficient, and they have to take 25 to 50 milligrams a day, sometimes for several months, until they are iodine sufficient and will excrete 90% of that 50 milligram tablet in a day, which in the
compensates deficiency.
So the thyroid is sort of like a capacitor or a battery. It takes time to store it up.
No, basically, we're talking about the iodine just for the whole body. Certainly, the thyroid stores up iodine, but all the whole body, all the tissues of the body, store up iodine. And of course, what Dr. Miller was saying is that most people, according to the doctors in the Thyroid Project, most people are iodine deficient. They're not getting enough iodine.
Right, and even if you get enough iodine, drinking fluoridated water and fluoride in toothpaste and soda pop and in processed foods, that in itself can cause hypothyroidism because of the fluoride molecule will displace the iodine and get into the thyroid in its place.
Yes, I've gradually gotten off all the above, and I use baking soda to brush my teeth, but my other concern would be free radical pathology if I get too much iodine. How do you know if you're getting too much?
A few people will have, a small percentage of people will have an elevated TSH, but no symptoms of hypothyroidism. And some people, if you're taking doses more than 50 milligrams a day, will develop some swelling of the thyroid and of the salivary gland without change in the hormones. But it turns out the phobia with iodine is that it's a poison. But iodine is not nearly the poison that it's made out to be. In fact, water is many thousands of times more toxic than iodine. And, for example, there's a case of a 54-year-old man who drank a home preparation of SSKI, supersaturated potassium iodine, in water that his aunt kept in a refrigerator for her rheumatism. And he consumed 600 milliliters, which contained 15 grams of iodide, an amount that's 100,000 times more than recommended. He developed swelling to the face, neck, and mouth, had transient heart rhythm disturbances, and made an uneventful recovery. Whereas our daily intake of water is 1 to 2 liters, and if you drink 10 liters of water quickly at one setting, five times the normal daily amount can kill you.
Wow. I heard that's also a function of altitude, too.
Yes.
Could very well be. Anyway, of course, this really is fairly, fairly safe. And, of course, the most significant thing is they've taken the iodine largely out of our diet by removing it from half of the salt, by removing it from milk and bread, and then they've substituted fluoride, which really is a very, very toxic substance. And, of course, the fluoride is competing with the iodine for our thyroid function. I think that's where people are getting lots of problems. Hey, Thee, anything else you want to say before we go to
Mark? I just would add this. Of the five halogens, another one that's an important consideration is bromide.
Right.
And bromide,
they then make good, don't they?
Pardon me?
They put bromine now in brominated vegetable oil. I've seen that on constituent of foods.
Mountain Dew has brominated vegetable oil. And it's used as a dough conditioner for bread. And so one of the effects of high-dose iodine is what's called iodism, where you get a brassy taste in the mouth and acne-like changes in the skin. But that turns out that it's not the iodine doing that, but it's pulling out the bromide from the tissues, and it's due to bromism. And so if you lower the dose of iodine, those symptoms will go away. Because one of the important effects of iodine is that it removes fluoride and bromide from the body.
And I think that's the best thing you could possibly do. Hey, thanks for calling, Dee. We've got one more call, and let's go to Barbara. Hi, Barbara. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I heard of a study where people, or specifically women in eastern Canada, were more susceptible to breast cancer than any other part of the country, and that anybody who moved there from anywhere else developed that same susceptibility. Could this possibly be a deficiency of iodine in that area?
It could, but it could be one other thing, too, which would be the subject of another interview, and that is vitamin D. And we know that vitamin D levels vitamin D prevents cancer, and when the vitamin D levels are low, the incidence of breast, colon, ovarian, and prostate cancer go up.
Okay.
So in Canada, you're at a high latitude, and in Canada, Seattle is 47 degrees, just south of Canada, and from the middle of October until April 1st, the sun is at an angle where the UVB rays can't get through, and you can't make vitamin D in your skin from the sun. So people that move from lower latitudes to Canada will experience an increased incidence of those cancers.
And for 10 cents a day, well, you can get enough vitamin D, so you're not going to have that problem. But
so you have a double factor involved there.
All right, we'll be right back. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank
Barbara.
You.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Dr. Donald Miller. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What message would you like to leave with our listeners tonight, Doctor?
Well, medicine today is supposedly what's called ideally evidence-based medicine. But it turns out that the evidence with regard to iodine was more sound 2 centuries ago than it is now. For example, the Coventry Remetry for goiter was very effective in treating this disease, and it was long held secret and been published in 1779, and it was burnt sea sponge. Then Bernard Courtois discovered iodine in 1811. Andrew Fife in 1816 found that sea sponge contains high quantities of iodine. And 1820, a French physician showed that tincture of iodine shrink goiter. Well, now, in 2001, we have a situation where consensus trumps science. And the consensus view is that iodine intake should not exceed 300 micrograms a day. Endocrinologists decree without evidence that iodine greater than 1 milligram a day is excessive, and physicians ignore studies that iodine in milligram doses can cure, among other things, fibrocystic disease of the breast. So one thing that we need to do in medicine is to indeed start looking at all the studies and using this evidence. And what it's going to show is that I think that iodine in milligram amounts is one of the most important things that we can do to improve our health in a very effective way.
And I agree with you, and I think this is really rather exciting. And we've even had, since we've been carrying Iodorol for a couple of weeks, we've had a couple of people, send me emails and tell me about some amazing things that have happened. Of course, you can't arrive at a conclusion just because somebody tells you that suddenly long-standing pain has disappeared, but it certainly makes you very interesting that, let's put it, it's an interesting observation. Get enough interesting observations, why maybe we could even design a study. Well, Dr. Miller, thank you so very much for being with us. And again, one more time, your webpage, so people would know where to go to get your information.
Yes, it's www.donaldmiller.com, all one word.
DonaldMiller.com. Would you be interested in doing a program sometime on vitamin D? I think it's a fascinating subject.
Yes, I would. I'm researching it now, and I'm going to write an article about it. And I would be happy when that research is done to come back on and talk about it.
All right, fine. I think this is another very exciting thing, a very inexpensive treatment, and it dramatically decreases the incidence of cancers, many of them. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you've enjoyed our program this evening with Dr. Donald Miller, and we'll try to get him back on as we put together a 4-tape set on vitamin D and the benefits of vitamin D. But right now, first of all, I need to remind our listeners, Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and of course, we really, of course, need your help to continue doing what we're doing and hopefully to be able to expand our listening audience. We have opportunities to get all sorts of news stations, but we can't do it without the funding. We're not going to go out on a limb. And right now, so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter. You can go up on our webpage and pull down our newsletter there for nothing, or we'll be glad to send you a free copy if you haven't gotten one before. And then, of course, we hope that you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which may very well explain to you why they are taking the iodine out of our milk and out of our bread and out of half of our salt. And, of course, we suggest that there really is another agenda. And now we put together a four-tape set on iodine, and you can call in and request that. You can get it either in CD or in audio tape. Four interviews going into the background, or 4 hours of information, 2 hours with Dr. Fletcher's, an hour interview with Dr. Blaylock, and then the interview you heard this evening. And you need to get the information. We're also offering, with that, you'll get an article going into the background of iodine metabolism. I want to mention we do carry here, magnesium and selenium, which Dr. Miller suggests. You want to be taking that, and most people are deficient in both magnesium and selenium, and also vitamin D, 1,000 milligram tablets, which are, 1,000 unit tablets, I should say. And you should be taking several of those a day. The sunshine vitamin is vitally important, and of course new research is really showing that if everybody was taking vitamin D, it would dramatically decrease the incidence of heart disease and of cancer. But of course the average person doesn't know. You'll be fascinated when we get that four tape set available. If you want information on that subject, why, you can give us a call, and we'll be glad to get you a copy of my recent interview with Bill Sardi on that subject. If you want to just get one tape on vitamin D, or you can wait until we get the full set ready. But right now, you can get our four tape set on fluoride. If you'd like to get Iodoral, why, it is available through Radio Liberty. We also carry the potassium iodide, which is suggested that you have on hand in case of a nuclear attack. So all of those are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, to put things into their large picture, you need to get my talk, Planned Population Reduction. It's available on DVD or video. And you say, planned population reduction, what are you talking about? I'm talking about genocide, ladies and gentlemen. Why do you think that one in every 150 American children is autistic? It used to be one in 10,000. It increased 60-fold, that's 60-fold. And the health officials say, oh, shucks, we just have no idea why that happened. And they're simply lying. If you want to go into the background of how we know they're lying, is we actually they actually had a meeting and they took minutes there. And you'll find the story of the up on Dr. Mercola's webpage, where Dr. Blaylock has actually gone through the minutes of that meeting and will tell you what they said about how, well, we're not going to get our children on those vaccines with the mercury in them. But, of course, it's going to be all right. They're going to cover it up so your children will get them. They know what they're doing. That's what's so unconscionable. We actually have the full text of that. We've never made it available, but we certainly can. This was a meeting the CDC and the World Health Organization sponsored in Georgia, where they discussed the fact that thimerosal was responsible for autism, and they decided not to tell the public, because if you ever learned, you wouldn't trust them anymore. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. And hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment with another fascinating program. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, of course, tonight you are going to be the guest on our program, because this is Open Line Wednesday. We are ready to do it during the first hour, but, well, we thought we'd do it during the second hour because we wanted to get Dr. Miller on very, very much, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with him. Under any circumstances, this evening we'll talk about what you'd like to talk about. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I thought maybe we'd start out talking about the tragedy of what's unfolding over in Iraq today, where we've lost over 3,000 men, and of course, going along with that, we probably had another 45,000 American soldiers wounded. And then, of course, we have another amazing phenomenon. About 30%, 3 out of every 10 men who come back from there, women come back within 3 months are ill with some sort of a disease. And once again, it's like the people who came back from Vietnam with Agent Orange. And, of course, the government knew that poisoned them. But they said, oh, shucks, we have no idea what's going on. I mean, certainly it has nothing to do with Agent Orange. You can trust us. Dioxin's perfectly safe. And I know that most of you know that recently President Bush has authorized a number of, I think, $20 or $30 million for the Vietnamese to begin to clean up the mess, the poisoned soil over there in Vietnam, as a direct result of the use of dioxin. But you see, they poisoned the people over there, and they poisoned our own servicemen, and they knew it, and they lied about it. And then after the first Gulf War, why, of course, about one in every 3 to 4 of the veterans of the first Gulf War is ill. Over 80,000 of them are dead. These are the veterans of the first Gulf War. I mean, young, healthy people predominantly. Well over 10% of the men we sent to the fight in the first Gulf War, Desert Storm, are dead. If you want to check out those facts, and you can say, how could that be true? Why, we'll be glad to send you the figures from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and of course we have them. 695,000 men went over, and about 610,000 today are still alive, at least according to the, presumed to be alive, according to the Veterans Administration. The rest, we presume that they're dead by their own figures. But out of the veterans of the First and the Second Gulf War, over 325,000 are on permanent disability. Over 325,000, another 80 to 100,000 have claims pending. That's going to be 400,000 people are going to be, certainly having claims pending, are going to be receiving disability benefits from these two wars, and they're going to get them for the rest of their lives. And of course, that's going to cost us trillions of dollars to take care of the veterans of these senseless wars. And a lot of this is saying, but these people were wounded in battle. Many of them are victims of experiments that were carried out, depleted uranium, when our military blew up the large catches of poison gas. Why would you blow up poison gas and spread it all over the desert and contaminate our troops? Unless, of course, you wanted to hurt them. Well, there really are evil and wicked people out there. When you understand that, when you understand that people have lied about it, and, of course, General Schwarzkopf, giving sworn testimony, lied about the poison gas that was dispersed upon our troops by our own government. It was certainly Saddam's poison gas. But the reason that they had to blow that up was because, of course, if you went into the bunkers, and they actually, some of the people did, and they took video pictures, and you know where that poison gas came from? A lot of it came from the United States. Now, some of it came from our other friends as well. And, of course, not only the United States, but other countries had sold probably Russia as well, had sold large amounts of poison gas to Saddam Hussein in violation of all the laws, international laws. And if you want to see those videos that were taken, Joyce Risley has them in some of the material that's available from the Power Hour. So you can check it out there. But that, right now we have Paul calling, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you, Doctor?
Doing fine.
I had a question about, was that vitamin D that you said, or was it B?
Vitamin D, yes.
D or B?
No, D is in dog. It's the sunshine vitamin. And what's really so amazing about this is that everything has been done to frighten people away from taking it. And yet, of course, it's absolutely essential for health long before we had treatment for tuberculosis.
About 7,000?
No, you'd probably take a couple of thousand units a day.
2,000?
About 2,000 units. That's what I take at the present time. Now, if you had some other sorts of neoplasm, things of that sort, and I'm not suggesting you don't get regular therapy, but I would certainly take large doses of vitamin D at that point, because there are many, many studies that show if people were taking large doses of vitamin D, they would not be getting cancer of the colon and many cancer of the breast and many of the other cancers that are becoming epidemic in our society today. And if you didn't hear my interview earlier this week with Bill Sardi, you'll certainly want to get it. Do you have access to the internet, Paul?
At the library.
All right, fine.
I'm not fairly ever go down there, because any of these vitamins, if you take a large dose of them, it affect your kidneys, it hurt your kidneys, or any of your major, or any of your glands?
Well, if you take rational amounts of them, you have to know what you're doing, but certainly vitamin D is extremely safe. Well, vitamin D, of course, if you were to take off your shirt and stand out in the sun in Denver or almost any place in the country for an hour, you'd get 10,000 units of vitamin D. Actually, vitamin D is manufactured in your skin.
What about B12? What do you recommend there?
Well, Sydney, the exact, I can't give you the dose on B12 off the top of my head, but vitamin B12 and folic acid are very, very important adjuncts to a good vitamin regime. And you take these multivitamins, and they really don't have enough in there. I mean, they have just a fraction of the amount of magnesium and selenium you use and you need. And we take actually, about 1,000 milligrams, I think maybe 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day, and we take about 2,000 units of vitamin D a day.
Can I hold over?
Sure, you right ahead. Okay, right now we have Paul calling from Ohio. He was asking about the use of vitamins, and certainly most people are deficient in magnesium, they're deficient in selenium. I believe they're deficient in iodine as well, which is why we do these programs. And a fascinating material on iodine. We just put together a 4-tape set on it. We've got a great book on magnesium. We're going to put together a 4-tape set on that and make these things available so people will know how to look after their health. Because so much has been done to confuse the American people and to get them eating the wrong things, and certainly by encouraging them to use the MSG and the aspartate and telling it's perfectly safe. Well, they know these are excitotoxins, and of course they're carcinogenic, and then what they've done with the mercury in our fillings and mercury certainly in our food and mercury in our vaccines, which they inject into people. Mercury is so toxic you can't paint it on the skin. It was actually methylate, but you can't. They outlawed that. You can't buy it anymore. But it's all right to inject it into our children. When they're 6 months of age, in fact, up until recently, they're injecting it in the nursery into the children and demanding that the parents will let them do it. And, of course, by that time, we were getting skyrocketing rates of autism. Anything else, Paul?
Yes, there's a fellow here that he wrote some books on the Communist Chinese Army. Where it's been, where it is now, and the horrifying prospect of where it will be in the future. I was hoping you could get him on your show, if you could contact him. It's Ralph Sawyer.
I don't know him at all. Do you have access? You don't have access to email, do you? Well, I'll tell you what.
I have his email address.
All right, what is it?
Sawyer, S-A-W-Y-E-R, at ralphsawyer.com.
But I would just simply point out, Paul, that it's so easy to look at things in a stereotype manner. I mean, the communists are the enemy and we're the good guys. Well, people have forgotten it was our State Department that brought the communist Chinese to power back in 1949, 1950. And if you want to verify that, of course, you can get the McCarran Committee report, the Senate investigation into why China went communist, and there's no question. Our State Department brought communism to power. And not only that, but they suppressed the fact that the communist government actively starved to death between 41 and 43 million people between 1958 and 1962. How could you cover up the greatest human genocide of all history?
Wow.
And yet they have, and this is covered in a book called The Hungry Ghost, but the figures I just gave you actually come from a book called A Mother's Ordeal, I think it is, by Stephen Mosier, and we'd be glad to send you the pages. And Stephen Mosier actually knew the Chinese officials who actually came up with those figures. How could you conceal something like that from the American people? And then who's building up the communist Chinese today? I mean, the miracle, the industrial miracle you're seeing in communist China is all financed by the United States. The World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the Asian Development Bank, the Export-Import Bank, Goldman Sachs, Chase Manhattan, J.P. Morgan and Citibank, and General Motors, and of course now Ford and Intel, and they're the ones who are building up, and it's not all for profit. We are creating the best enemy money could buy in preparation for the coming war, just exactly as we built up Adolf Hitler's Germany in preparation for World War II, and Japan in preparation for World War II. These people know exactly what they're doing. They just want the American people to know.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you, and thank you for being there.
God bless you, too. Thanks very much. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got Greg calling from Cleveland, Texas. Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I basically woke up like a month ago. I read a book, The Shadows of Power by James Perloff.
Yeah, that's a real old book. We actually carry the book still. James is a personal friend. That's a great book, though.
Yeah, and I heard you a couple years ago on having an interview with Chuck Misler,
right.
And you stated that all wars have been contrived by man, and it stuck in my head for a couple years. I just woke up, and then I've been downloading all your MP3s and just been fascinated and just a lot of things going on, but I had a question about, I saw on the internet, Bush somehow being related to Aleister Crowley. Have you heard of that?
No, I really haven't. I really wouldn't even want to comment in one way, but I will tell you that George Bush and his father and his grandfather are members of a Luciferian society, and
right.
Part of the routine is that they, in their initiation, they kneel before Lucifer. And if you want to see the movies of that, at least of the initiation, you can see that on WilliamHKennedy.com. That's WilliamHKennedy.com. And Bill Kennedy, William Kennedy, actually has posted on that website the video pictures somebody else had taken of the ceremony there where they kneel before this horned creature. And then, of course, there's a parody on the Pope standing with his foot on a skull, and I've forgotten what the third figure is, but there's no question at all that this is a Luciferian movement. And of course, we carry one book called The Secrets of the Tomb by Alexandra Robbins, where Alexandra tells the story of that a woman had told her who had actually witnessed one of their secret ceremonies, and this was in a barn. It was a Skull and Bones wedding. And there they were with their black robes and hoods and pagan candles and pagan chants. And, they caught her and they told her they'd kill her if she ever told anybody what she'd seen. And, of course, the description of that ceremony is so similar to the description that you'll actually see, or the ceremony you'll actually see on William Kennedy's website of what goes on at the Bohemian Grove, where the leaders of our country are there with their black robes and their hoods and their candles and their pagan chants. And we actually have this on a video called The Dark Secrets of the Bohemian Grove, but you can see clips of that on both Alex Jones' website and WilliamHKennedy.com. William's done a great job of getting the material, and his new book, Satanic Crimes, gives a great deal of information on the Skull and Bone Society that our president, that his father, and his grandfather all belong to.
Well, I went to that encyclopedia website, W-something, and it has like a globe with like the puzzle of different puzzle pieces, and that's where it talked about the mother of, I think, the Bush Senior. They have a picture of holding a baby, and so it was like a legitimate, you know, talking about, you know, somehow Alistair came over here over in California during that time period and all this other kind of stuff, so.
There may be something to, I can't comment on it if I don't know, if I don't,
sure.
You know, I'm going to make a statement that I can't back up.
Sure, totally, totally. Well, I thought, you know, maybe something to come across, but.
I've heard some people say things, but yeah, I want to see some documentation.
Right.
Well, there's so much disinformation they're putting out there just to confuse us, so be. Take everything with a grain of salt. You've got to learn who you can trust. And, you know, there are a few people out there that, you know, are very, very reliable. We'll all get trapped occasionally, but, you know, for instance, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, if he says something, he's got the documentation on it. If Joyce Riley says something, she's got the documentation on it. And I'll tell you, the things that Alex Jones puts up there, he can document those things he's got, and we try to be able to document the things we get. So when somebody calls and says, well, show me. I want to be able to show you where it comes from an authoritative source.
No, that vitamin D, I went to the health food store. They had like D3. Do you know which specifically?
Yeah, you want to use the D3. You don't want to use a D2, and you don't want to use a D4. You want to use D3, and so that's what you want to get. And you want to get about 1,000 milligrams. Now, you can get a higher dose through Bill Sawney's website, but we don't want to compete with Bill, so we're not going to be carrying the 5,000 units, but you can get 1,000 units from us.
Well, now, these I was looking at, they were IU units.
That's international units, right.
Okay, all right. Okay, well...
What did they have in the health food store? Were they 400 milligrams or 1,000 milligrams?
Here, let me go see. I just got another day, and
Basically, you know, there's nothing wrong with the 400 milligrams, except you got to take, you know, a lot more of them to get the same amount. And you really want to be taking a substantial amount of vitamin D. It really is so important as far as bone health is concerned. But it really has been found, of course, it helps to control calcification. One of the big problems we have, hardening of the arteries, is not cholesterol. It's calcium in the arteries, and that's what produces the hardening of the arteries. And, of course, vitamin D does help as far as that is concerned, and with so many other parts of our metabolism.
Yeah, this is 2,400 IU.
All right, so that's a good dose. So that certainly is would be a good dose to take. 2,400 units, fine.
Okay, and it was $10 for 120 of soft gels.
Right, and I think that's probably a pretty good price.
Okay, on the health issue, what else would be good just to, we're talking about the thyroid gland, testosterone has been lowered. Just offhand, do you know anything that would help increase motivation and, that wouldn't necessarily be caffeine or addicting or anything like that?
Well, that's sort of a big subject. I mean, certainly you want to be on adequate vitamin C, you want to be on adequate vitamin D, you want to be on adequate. You should be taking fish oils, you should be getting some folic acid, things of that sort. Magnesium, certainly magnesium is very important, selenium. You just keep listening to our programs, and we'll be doing some programs specifically on that subject. But, I mean, first of all, you have to be sure you don't have something else, specifically going on that might be medically. You need to get checked off. You need to be sure you're in good health generally. And then, of course, you need to consider all of these supplements. Okay?
All right. Thanks so much.
Good night. God bless. We'll be back in just a moment. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it looks like we've got Marilyn calling from California. Hi, Marilyn. Where are you calling from? Marilyn, are you there? This is not Greg, is it? I guess we lost Marilyn then. So anyway, I don't know what happened to Marilyn. I guess the gremlins got her. If Marilyn would like to call back, why? We'd be glad to talk to her, and we have somebody else calling in here. But our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But you need proper nutrition. Of course, the thing is, you should not be eating too much. I think we all eat too much. You need to be eating a lot more fruits and a lot more vegetables. You need to be staying away from the heavy fats and things of that sort. If you're cooking, you ought to be cooking in olive oil with my wife. And you want to get not just the regular olive oil, but the green olive oil. The meat products have things in them that really are not healthy for you. Actually, they're putting genetically engineered crops, and we never know, of course, when we're eating either corn products or soy products or canola oil or cottonseed oil, if they're genetically engineered or not. We do know, for instance, that a lot of the milk is made, and the majority of our milk now is made from a recombinant bovine growth hormone that they give to the cows. But there are carcinogenic properties in milk, and they know there are. And if you're a regular milk drinker, why, of course, your chances of getting cancer of the prostate increases and increases rapidly. They know that, and they're suppressing the information. Why? Why? Because it gets ruined the milk industry. And rather, but behind so much of what's going on today is another agenda which is so very, very difficult to for the average individual to believe. And that's really why you'll want to get a copy of our January newsletter, which is just completed now and will be going out the next day or so. Because the January newsletter has a copy of the Fitzgerald Report in it. And people say, what's the Fitzgerald Report? Well, I would have probably said the same thing about 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago when one of our listeners had called and I had sent me a note and sent a donation and asked me to get a copy of the Fitzgerald Report for him. He said he'd been trying for many weeks or months to get a copy of it. It had been replaced in the Congressional Record in August of 1953 by Dr. Charles Toby, I think was the name, or at least the son of Senator Charles Toby. And it had been prepared by somebody who worked for one of the government departments and had to do with suppression of cancer treatments. Well, I figured, you know, Fitzgerald Report, and nice man, and sent a donation to Radio Liberty and went up on the Internet, checked everything out. I found numerous references to the Fitzgerald Report, but I couldn't find the report. I called the National Health Federation because I figured this international organization would certainly have a copy, and they told me they had tried for years to get a copy of the Fitzgerald Report. They could not get it anyplace, and they'd eventually given up. The gentleman, of course, who had requested told me that he'd checked with a number of libraries that had the report, but would not make it available for him. I was intrigued. Suddenly, something is being covered up, and we were going to get a copy for our readers, and I'll tell you what happened in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is Open Line, so if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we were talking about something called the Fitzgerald Report that had been inserted in the Congressional Record in August of the year 1953 by the son of a United States senator who had died, as so often happens when people are beginning to get too close to the devil's heartbeat. And anyway, the report was written by a gentleman named Fitzgerald who had actually worked for the committee that Senator Charles Toby headed, and they were looking into suppression of cancer treatments. So the report had been inserted in the Congressional Record, and it's been suppressed ever since then. Of course, we were able to get a copy of the report, and we just simply included that as the last four pages of this month's newsletter, because we want to have 2,000 copies of that Fitzgerald report out there, and of course, we hope that you will copy it and get that distributed all across America. I think it's vitally important. The American people have an opportunity to know that they have been suppressing cancer treatments for many years. And you say, why would anybody suppress cancer treatments? And we answer that certainly with a quotation from Dr. Richard Day, who is the medical director of Planned Parenthood. And according to Dr. Dunnigan, who we have a series of interviews with, and that is interviews are included in a four-tape set called The New Order of the Barbarians. That's The New Order of the Barbarians. And, of course, in that tape set, you'll hear him to say what Dr. Day told him. People are going to have to die of something. There are too many of them, too many people in the world. They might as well die of cancer. We are going to actively suppress cancer treatments. We know how to treat most cancers today, but we're going to actually conceal the treatment for those cancers in the basement of the Rockefeller Foundation, and of course, maybe sometime in the future, they'll be released. Could anything be that terrible? If you've ever seen people dying of cancer and the pain and agony, are there people so crass and indifferent to human sacrifice? Well, if you don't take our newsletter, you should. If you want a free copy of the January newsletter, we'll be glad to send it to you. It will be posted, however, on the Internet probably within a week. That's the January newsletter. All right, again, we've got Mike calling from Auto Canada, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if Marilyn's still out there, wants to give us a call back, why, we'll be glad to talk to her. Anyway, call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And how are you doing this evening, Mike?
Hello, hi. It's cold up here in Canada right now.
I bet it is. How cold is it?
Oh, geez. I don't even keep track. You know, I just sort of climb indoors and hibernate over the winter and hope for the best. You know, the
Ottawa do you live in?
Oh, well, in the province of Ontario, Ottawa.
Okay, fine. Well, that's
capital.
That's the capital, isn't it?
Yeah, capital of Canada.
Okay.
Right on the border with Quebec. The odd thing about Ottawa is is fluoridated, and if you look at the statistics for Ontario, I believe 66 or 68% of the drinking water in Ontario is fluoridated. If you compare that to Quebec, which is, I guess, primarily Catholic, it's Catholic French, they have, I believe it's somewhere about 6% of their water.
So they're a lot smarter. They're a lot smarter than the rest of the Canada then.
Exactly. Well, we've been essentially run by Quebec for the last 30 or 40 years. We've had prime ministers hailing from Quebec, going back to Trudeau in the 60s.
You have to understand that they, at least certain people, understand what they're doing. This is why Adolf Hitler, and this is covered in a book we have that's called the... it was an answer to the AIDS of... the AIDS of Treason, I think is the title. But it was an answer, of course, the book was written by Bertrand Russell, entitled The Impact of Science in Society. But in this book, they simply went into the fact that Adolf Hitler had actually ordered fluoridation of the water of the occupied territories, but not of the German territories. In other words, he wasn't going to poison his own people. He was going to poison the people in the occupied territories because it makes people more placid. And the same thing was true as far as the gulag. They fluoridated the water in the gulag. Our leaders know what they're doing. They just want the American people. And I guess the Canadian leaders know what they're doing. And there's one gentleman who's a professor up there in Toronto told me he'd been threatened if he ever came forward and told the truth of what he knew about the dangers of water fluoridation in Canada. Hey, we'll be back here in just a moment, Mike, and then we can get your question there.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Mike from Ottawa, Canada. Okay, Mike, what was the question?
Okay, now it's late, and I'm getting into some esoteric thought here.
All right, fine.
I'm thinking about modern-day cannibalism would be a blood transfusion. When you think of it, that's vampirism in a high-tech sense. Is that you're taking blood from, you know, from a donor, and you're strengthening somebody else.
Well, I'll tell you what, as a physician, you have somebody who's been in a severe accident, as that's happened many, many times. When I was doing trauma surgery, and that person's come in, and they bled down, and of course they're in acute shock, and if you have blood transfusions, you give it to them because you're going to save their lives. I mean, we can argue whether it's high-tech cannibalism, but it is life-saving.
The trouble
today, however, is that the blood supply is no longer anywhere near as safe as it was when I was practicing medicine 20 or 30 years ago. And I would, today, if there was any way you could possibly avoid giving a transfusion, I would. But once in a while you're in that situation, it's a life and death situation, and you take the gamble. And believe me, when you're a doctor, it's an awesome responsibility to know that you may very well give somebody hepatitis or possibly even AIDS or a myriad of other diseases because, of course, people will get chronic fatigue syndrome because, of course, the mycoplasms are in the blood. They don't even bother to test for that or the herpes and other monkey viruses or the simian 40 virus and all these other things in the blood. But, you take a gamble and you just hope and pray you're going to do more good than harm. But go ahead, Kevin.
I would agree. I didn't mean to demonize, blood donoring or the use of transfusion. I agree that is a, it's a good advance in saving people. But I was just thinking, what's interesting, if you look at the symbology of the American Red Cross, it is a red cross.
Right.
And I've been looking into the history of these secret societies, like the Knights of Malta and
the Knights Templar. That was their symbol, was that red cross on a white background.
Yeah, it seems to stretch right back, and I believe a lot of these were occult organizations and were connected with human sacrifice and all kinds of strange occult ritual.
Well, you know what? Because the emblem of the medical profession is. It's a staff across two coiled serpents. People don't understand that the symbology is there every place. It's always hidden in plain sight. Hey, you hang on there. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's open lines here on Wednesday, and our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We're talking to Mike from Ottawa, and he's just talking about the symbology of, say, of the Red Cross, you know, that collects blood and disseminates it, and how the Red Cross you would see in certain coats of arms, the Knights of Malta, and I simply mentioned the Knights Templar. It was a red cross on a white background. That was the symbol of the Knights Templar. That's what they wore on their chest, beneath their over their armor. And of course, these emblems, these logos, as you were, have been around for centuries. Indeed, some of them for many millennia. And these emblems are hidden in plain sight. You will see them every place. Trouble is, most people don't even recognize them. Go ahead, Mike.
What's interesting is I hear tales of modern-day cannibalism that I haven't been able to confirm in a direct sense. Like I heard, for example, the Bohemian Grove. I've heard an account of somebody being killed and having their brains eaten.
Well, but you see, we can't verify any of that. They have a symbolic ceremony. They have a symbolic sacrifice, but they claim it's simply a feigned human sacrifice, not a real human sacrifice.
But well, there was this unconfirmed one, which I think that one has been documented. Everybody knows that that is a fact, that that effigy burning goes on. But I've also heard of the sacrifice of a child, or snuff porn allegedly filmed at Bohemian Grove, and the idea that Hunter Thompson was involved and he may have been killed, etc., in relation to that.
I have no question that there is human sacrifice. There is satanic sacrifice. In fact, this new book we're carrying by William H. Kennedy gets into the human sacrifice. And my interviews with Ted Gunderson, who has investigated the Franklin cover-up and the pedophile ring associated with Boys Town. We actually did an interview with Ted Gunderson within the last 2 weeks. We did two interviews with him. And I have no question at all. It really is human sacrifice going on. There are 100,000 children who disappear in this country every year, and very few of them are ever found.
Yes, and there are snuff films. That a snuff film ring was located in Europe, operating from Israel to Italy to, I think, somewhere out of Russia also.
We live in a fallen world. We live in an evil world. Most people don't like to think about this, but I think it is true. And there are certain instances where these things can be verified. I mean, I would not say that we have any proof of such things that would happen at the Bohemian Grove.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's ancient people that, ancient organizations or associations of people that have always eaten the brains of animals. You think of it. If a tribe were to kill a large animal, say an elephant or something, who would eat the brains? Would it be the shaman, or would it be like the top hunter, or would it be like the witch doctor? I know these.
I really don't know, Mike.
They wouldn't waste it.
I know that over in New Guinea, why? Of course, it was the tribe where they had a disease called Kuru, and of course, it was somebody went over and investigated. And they were cannibals, and of course they were eating the brains of the people that they killed. Now, this would be at the time of the Second World War and after the Second World War. The interesting part of this is that there's some people who suggest that the disease which caused Kuru had been actually introduced by the Japanese doctors who were doing biological warfare research, and it is from this that the mad cow disease which is affecting people comes, and Don Scott has written a great deal about that, but that's a different subject. Is there any question or anything else you'd like to say? Because we got a full board of people waiting.
Oh no, I've had a lot of time, but I'd love to call you again because you're a fascinating source of information, and you're so open-minded. Yet you have penetrating intelligence. So I will look forward to speaking to you again.
Well, God bless you. I hope my wife heard that. good night, Mike. Thanks so much for calling. Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Kevin, who's calling from Austin, Texas. Hi, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Dr. Stan. Great to hear you tonight. Dr. Miller was very good. I really liked the idea of the iodine can remove the fluoride from the body.
Yeah, and I think all these things are important. And the thing is that why would you take the iodine out of our food and put fluoride into it? It doesn't make sense unless these people are not stupid. You have to understand. They are not stupid. Some of them, of course, have no idea what they're doing, but a few of them know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want us to know, us inferior people.
The other day, a guy at work was he was kind of joking about, you know, how stupid people need to be kind of... It's too bad we don't have predators that could just eat off the stupid people. So I said to the guy, well, you know, we have the Rockefellers. And they're friends, so, you know, it was a bad thing that the guy was saying, of course, but I was just going to, a couple of things. The guy that talked before, he was talking about fluoride, and it's an interesting thing, because I was getting some, like, tomato juice. I thought it was organic tomato juice, and then I realized it was reconstituted with some water from somewhere. So it depends on the city where you buy something. And so tonight I started doing an investigation. I checked Austin, my town, they fluoridate the water. Boulder, Colorado, they fluoridate the water. So when you buy drinks that come from that, like a beer or something, or, you know, whatever, it's got fluoride. And so that's something that I've been wondering about.
And you're absolutely right, and you should be concerned about it. And my friend, Dr. David Kennedy, he has the capacity to actually, actually measure fluoride, and you know, so you'll find it many times in Coca-Cola if it is produced in an area where they fluoridate the water. Beer, if they make it in an area where they fluoridate the water, there'll be the fluoride in the beer. And you do not want to be consuming all that fluoride because it is a poison. It's cumulative and it has a profound impact on your endocrine system, on your bones, on your brain, on your level of your intelligence. It certainly is a devastating poison. So why are they adding it to water? They know what it does.
And it's actually very interesting that Quebec does not have fluoride in their water.
I was not aware of that, but it is an interesting thing.
I guess
those French are pretty a lot smarter than the British are.
You know, they are. The English always put them down, but they've been drinking red wine and they've been drinking olive oil and garlic all these years, right?
Right.
It's true. And their women are all thin too. So I don't know. They're doing something right.
All right. Fine.
I was going to ask you about Eric Phelps.
All right. Fine.
The Vatican assassins.
Right.
Are you familiar with him?
Yes, I am. I've interviewed him.
Oh, you have?
Yes. A long time ago. But basically, Eric has a lot of very interesting things in his book, The Vatican Assassins. But he wants to attribute all of the problems of the world to the Jesuits. The Jesuits a problem? Absolutely. Is the Vatican a problem? Absolutely. Is the leaders of the Protestant Church a problem? Absolutely. What about some of the people, the leaders of the Jewish Church? Absolutely. These satanic influences have infiltrated everything. So, although I think there's a lot of truth in his book, The Vatican Assassins, to try to say it's just the Jesuits, it's just the Catholics, or just the Knights of Malta, or just Opus Dei, or just the Rosicrucians. No, it's all of them. There are elements that have infiltrated every aspect of religion, and these are satanic influences that are, of course, misleading the people. And they're doing a pretty good job of it. So this is why we don't emphasize Eric Phelps, because I haven't had him on again. I think he's a very nice man, and I think he's very sincere. And I think he's fixated on one thing. I mean, I have people call me all the time, and they tell me if I would just attack the Vatican. I mean, they're the center of this. I have other people who call me and tell me it's just the Jews who are responsible for everything. And it's not the Jews. There are a few people in the Jewish religion who are either Satanists or controlled by Satanists, and the same thing at the upper echelons of the Jesuits, of the Catholics, of the Protestant Church. They're every place. Certainly the Mohammedan faith, the Muslim faith, by its very nature is satanic. It doesn't mean that everybody who's in it is a Satanist, but of course, if you go back and you read the Quran, Mohammed will say he was frightened to death that he was demonically possessed. And I think he was. I mean, this is the reason, of course, they put out a contract on Salman Rushdie, who wrote the book, The Satanic Verse, because he was exposing the satanic influence within the Muslim faith.
Yep.
Anything else there?
Good. I'm loving it. Keep it up.
Okay. God bless you. Good to talk to you again. And I'll try to get all those people down there in Austin listening. All right, well, let's go right now to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz, and our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, and Ray from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. My question for tonight is, I wondered if you were aware of the quantity of mercury in energy saver bulbs. There's a thing now. HUD housing wants to put energy saver bulbs in all of the senior citizens' places in Santa Cruz, you know, and whatnot, you know, the places where. Residential places where senior citizens live.
For our listeners, of course, these are the fluorescent light bulbs.
They're filled with mercury, apparently.
Right. They have a little drop of mercury. Yes, there is mercury in all of those, and you sure don't want to be busting those bulbs.
What I'm thinking about, why do they want to do that? Because incandescent bulbs are just as good. I don't understand why they would want to have this movement to to have everybody use energy-saving bulbs in California, you know?
It's this whole obsession, Ray, with we've got to conserve. I mean, we're running out of energy. Yeah. We're running out of water. We're running out of fresh air. We're running out of electricity. We've got to use these energy, efficient bulbs so that we can save electricity. And don't you remember those PG&E ads where they would have this fellow come in and he's going around the house and he keeps clapping his hands, the lights would go out every place.
Mm-hmm.
What's the message? You've got to conserve.
They want to do away with incandescent bulbs, I think.
Well, but it's more than that. You may very well be right. They want to do away with incandescent bulbs. But the whole idea they want to get to the fluorescent ones is because this is energy conservation.
Mm.
We've got to conserve. We've got to stop driving such big cars. We've got to stop using so much gasoline. We've got to pass the Kyoto Protocol, and really cut back on our CO2 emissions. And it's all part of this scam.
Yeah.
We have got to lower the living standards of people in the United States. This is what it's really all about. It's all about this idea of equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And as long as they're going to lower our living standards here, why, of course, they want to get electricity so expensive. And this is what they're doing, that we're going to have to do away with our air conditioning. They're going to have to do away with, so much of our heat, electric heat, things of that sort. And we're going to have to do away with a lot of our factories.
Uh-huh.
And it is all part of a plan to restructure society.
And of course,
we could create this impression in our minds, there's a shortage of electricity. Mm. That's why we've got to use these bulbs.
And the utilities are owned by people from other countries. I mean, our utilities are controlled by people that are not even living in America,
But they're all part of this globalist program.
What happened to America? Well, they sold us down the river, as far as I'm concerned, our own government. And now everything is made in China, and you can't buy anything that's... I bought a lamp that was made in China that arced out on me. I put a light bulb in there, and the thing arced out. It was a arc of electricity that came out of it, nearly burned my room down.
All right. Well, anyway,
everything that's made in China is garbage.
All right, fine. Well, I'll tell you what, it's all going to be made in China very soon. If they have their way, they want to destroy the industrial base of our nation.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm going to have to run. God bless. Thanks so much for calling.
We'll see you. Bye.
And let's go to... is this Barbara calling again?
Yes, it is.
Oh, well, how are you tonight, Barbara?
I'm doing just fine. I was just listening to a lot of the things on the fluoride.
Right.
And it was just very interesting that they are pushing the idea of drinking green tea and how important it is for your health. But if you listen to Dr. David Kennedy, he talks about the fact that green tea is grown in an area of China where the water is extremely fluoridated.
Right.
That the green tea has a lot of fluoride in it.
Right.
And so this, this builds upon this whole aspect of the things that, you really shouldn't be having. In fact, apparently the white tea is a lot better for you, but they are really pushing the green tea, but it has a very high concentration of fluoride. Why are they doing this?
Because they want to poison us. I mean, I think that's the logical explanation. I think it really is so interesting that, most plants will not pick up fluoride. In other words, there may be fluoride in the soil, but they're not going to pick it up. It's only the tea plant that really does that, and specifically the green tea plant, but the rest of the plants are too smart to do it. But, however, we're not. We go ahead and drink it, and we think it must be good because we're told it's good.
Yeah, it was just something that I just really, has been impressed upon me over the last few weeks, and I just really thought, really should mention it.
And I think that actually Dr. Blaylock talks about that in his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Are you acquainted with that book?
Yes, I am, very much.
And isn't that a wonderful book?
It is. I use it, very frequently when I want to know something about what's good for my health. I go to Dr. Blaylock's book and look up what he has to say.
And that's Health and Nutrition Secrets You Can Save Your Life. Certainly one of my favorite books. And As you know, Dr. Blaylock is certainly one of our favorite guests. Anything else you'd like to cover?
No, thank you very much.
All right, fine. Thanks so very much, Barbara. Let's, of course, go to Jack, calling from Michigan. Jack, you always call at the end of the hour, but do you have a question or comment?
Well, yes and yes.
All right, fine.
Relative to the fellow who called regarding energy, I experimented with a thyroid tissue concentrate that comes derived from grass-fed animals as an experiment, and my energy just soared. I also tried magnesium malate, and I found an equally amazing energy effect from that. And so I, recognizing my body is a unique entity, but nevertheless a laboratory in itself, the experiment was a very beneficial one.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Jack. Jack, calling from Michigan. Well, Jack, what was this product you were eating that was a thyroid extract?
It's a thyroid tissue extract from a Brothers Pharmaceutical in Chicago. I just happened to spy it at a local health food store, and very reasonably priced. And I got it actually as a backup for my mother, who's end-stage renal failure, but has been on Armour Whole Thyroid for quite a spell. And when she ran out, I decided to see how it would function with her. And I did use it in conjunction with Iodorol, so it worked out really well for her. And I also wanted to ask you, Dr. Stan, in closing tonight, whether you could identify the three best sources, because I think of what JFK had planned to do with the CIA, disband it into 1,000 pieces, scatter it in the wind. I think it still applies today, perhaps even more so. And I was thinking perhaps you would you could identify the three best resources to enlighten people on that subject matter.
You mean on the Central Intelligence Agency?
Yeah, and how I think they're intimately connected with these recurring genocide police actions around the world.
Well, one excellent book we carry is called Double Cross, and it's written by Chuck Giancano, the brother of Sam Giancano, and who was the head of the Mafia at the time of the Kennedy assassination, and was probably involved with the Kennedy assassination. And the book just talks about how the CIA and the Mafia worked together. The book, again, is Double Cross. It's available through Radio Liberty. And, of course, there are so many other books out. There's a fellow named Marchetti who's written a book on the Central Intelligence Agency.
Oh.
And I think it's Victor Marchetti who's written extensively. There's no question at all that there is within the CIA a very, very dark side. Now, there are a lot of good people in the Central Intelligence Agency. Certainly, we carry Robert Byrd's excellent book, entitled See No Evil. But Byrd says, you know, he's never seen the dark side of the CIA. I heard him on a television program saying, if there's that side of the CIA, I never saw it. And I think he's honestly being very honest. I think there is, as Joel Skousen says, there's a white side or light side of the CIA and a dark side. It always seems, however, that the people on the dark side are there. I think another excellent book is Barry and the Boys, Daniel Hopsicker's book, which we do carry. And it goes into, of course, the CIA and drug smuggling. And then, of course, the books, of course, Defrauding America and Drugging America by Randy Stitz, both of which we carry and we've recommended. We'll be back in just a moment here.
You, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and this is, of course, the end of another Open Lines. I always enjoy Open Lines. I hope you do as well. And, of course, questions are unrehearsed. the answers are unrehearsed, too, and if they sound a little unprofessional, why, of course, it's just because we're trying to think on our feet as we're talking to thousands of people across America. Under any circumstances, this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. And if you agree that we have a real problem and that maybe Radio Liberty has a little different approach than most people, that maybe we really are involved in a spiritual battle, and their secret societies and powerful spiritual forces out there. We'd hope that many of you will be willing to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us. And you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Just talk to Mary there. And if you'd like to subscribe to the newsletter or join the Radio Liberty family, she'll tell you all about that. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to get it for you. Or you can go up to our webpage at radioliberty.com and pull down the webpage and certainly look at that. That radioliberty.com, and you can listen to our programs there on the internet 3 hours a day. The MP3, the archive programs, are up for about 6 weeks, and then after that you're going to have to get the tapes from us or the CDs from us, which we are in a position now where we can actually reproduce. And of course then we are on two other networks. You can listen to us 4 hours a day on shortwave and 9 hours a day on Telstar 5, along with Joyce Riley's Power Hour for 9 hours a day. And, of course, you're going to get a very inexpensive dish and satellite. There's no monthly charge. And you can listen to Radio Liberty, and you can listen to Al Jazeera, the American translation. The American English version of Al Jazeera is up there with about 100 other radio programs. Now, there are a lot of videos up there, but a lot of them are in foreign languages. But it's a fascinating satellite, a lot of great information. And, of course, this is a means by which we can reach people certainly halfway around the world through the miracle of satellite. So if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. If you're interested in getting iAuditorol or our 4-tape set on iodine or our potassium iodide tablets in case of a nuclear attack, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Certainly, if you've not yet laid in a supply of emergency food or have the barrels or the pumps or those other things, you'd like to get them, why, give us a call. We'll send you an emergency food catalog. But then you need to have on hand health products. You need to have a good supply of them. Because if we got into a problem, you're going to have to be able to protect your health. The vitamins, the C and D, and certainly of the actually, we're carrying something called IP6 rice bran now, which is a chelate. It actually helps to get some of the heavy metals out of your system, and you probably ought to take a 2-month course about once a year, and it'll help to get the iron out, because iron, of course, feeds cancers and feeds infections. They can't grow without iron, and excess iron is harmful to your health. There's so much you need to know about your health. We're putting together a new 4-tape set on my interviews with Dr. Blaylock, and we have a 4-tape set now on Life-Saving Secrets, interviews with Dr. Blaylock. We do carry that wonderful book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Blaylock. We carry his Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients and Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. These are available through Radio Liberty. We'll have a new 4-tape set for 2006 on Dr. Blaylock, and we'll have a new 2007 4-tape set very, very shortly. So go to our website, pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.